Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Are you ready to dive into the stories, stats, and personalities that make baseball the greatest game in the world? Rob Bradford from the Baseballs and Boring podcast here, and we'll have you covered every day with podcasts that bring you closer to the action, from the bleachers to the clubhouse. Whether you're a diehard fan or just a casual observer, these conversations are aimed to educate, entertain, and most importantly, inform you. Follow the Baseballs and Boring podcast in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're about to go around the NFL here in the loop on Sports Radio 610. But of course, as it seems is always the case with the question of the day, y'all saved a real good one for right when we go to break. A couple of stories of the inopportune times that you cussed. One came in from the 713. 15 years old, mom wouldn't let them do something, turned around and whispered the B word, immediately was picking themselves up off the floor. He said that 5 foot redhead was country strong. Yeah. See, look, when you upset your parents, it adds a different level. It just takes them to a different level. Just like this from the 509, said dad was their baseball coach when they were 12. They made the final out of a game, and apparently Pops told him, good hit, and he told him to F off.
Oh.
Pops said, I brought you into this world, yeah, and I can take you out.
Yeah.
Yoked him up against the wall. Yeah, Chuck, I know you were in that space.
Oh, boy.
Wait, why you tell him to F off?
He was just mad.
Because his dad was being sarcastic.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Oh, was his dad being sarcastic? Yeah. Maybe his dad wouldn't be sarcastic. He was just real mad, you know, like, just, I guess he thought his dad was one of his little friends, and he found out on that day, not one of your little friends is the answer there. All right, let's go around the NFL here now on Sports Radio 610. We begin in the AFC South, where we've got a little bit of an update from the horse's mouth. And that's actually no pun intended, because he is an Indianapolis Colt. His name is Anthony Richardson. And he says his shoulder's actually ready, right? So the team is reporting for training camp July 22nd, as I think the Texans are also
same day.
Reporting on the 22nd. Wow.
28 days from today.
Less than a month, baby.
Yeah.
Can't wait.
Yeah.
Cannot wait. But Anthony Richardson gave a positive update on it. He said, I'm all good, when he was talking to Zach Goodall of 24/7 Sports. He said, not really even a bump in the road. I feel like I tripped. I fell. I just got back up and hit the ground running, talking about the AC joint sprain. Mm-hmm. That he sustained, which is the same injury that he had prior. And earlier this month, Shane Steichen, when talking about it, wouldn't give us a timetable, which is why I was very much in the place of thinking, okay, it's going to be Daniel Jones, and we're going to see what that looks like. And honestly, I'm more intrigued, and I think that could have a level of impact for the Colts, especially with the way that Shane Steichen seemingly puts quarterbacks that are mildly capable in their best chance to succeed. But if Anthony Richardson is to be believed, right, after undergoing surgery to repair that AC joint in his right shoulder, like, he says he's good. Do you believe him? And what does that mean for the Colts? And I guess in a different way, what does that mean for the Texans?
I mean, I believe him, but we'll see how sustainable it is once you start throwing the ball more, getting hit, et cetera. But my initial reaction, good. I want Anthony Richardson quarterbacking the Indianapolis Colts. You know, I'm not his biggest fan, and in terms of, I mean, sure, he's a fine fella, but in terms of as a player, good. I hope Anthony Richardson is the quarterback. He's not accurate. He's not real good.
Is there anything in you that thinks that the AC joint played any factor into him being like one of the worst kind of completion percentage quarterbacks in the recent history?
I mean, unless he's had an AC joint since middle school.
Fair enough.
You know, because
he's
never been an accurate quarterback.
Damn, so he wasn't accurate since middle school?
Not that I saw. I could be corrected on that.
Oh, Lopez was out here grinding that middle school tape, baby. No, but
I know it sounds awful. I'm just telling you what the reality is. He's not an accurate quarterback.
He's not.
He's not.
And the Colts are very much falling for the Josh Allen trick. Which was what happened when I saw the Josh Allen thing actually coming to fruition, where he actually made himself into an accurate quarterback, something that we had not previously believed was a capable thing of doing, taking yourself from being inaccurate to making yourself accurate. I think we were all, at least I was looking at him like, okay, so now people are going to have even more reason to fall for the, look at the big, strong guy. I will fix all the other things, because we know that coaches in the NFL already operate with that sort of hubris, that teams were just going to fall into that. And Anthony Richardson seems to be, he's not the first, is he?
In terms of the Josh Allen impact?
Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to remember.
He's probably the most notable.
Yeah, I feel like there's another one that I'm missing in this moment, but he very much looks like he is, this is what typically happens when you try and do the Josh Allen thing. The Bills just got, in my opinion, really lucky. Obviously, I don't want to, you know, negate the idea that Josh Allen did the work, that, you know, guys like Brian Daboll and, you know, obviously Joe Brady and things around him, coordinators and such, helped him in that place. But no, man, this is probably more of what it is. We'll see what it looks like when they get to training camp, because best of luck to him as he returns and has a battle with Daniel Jones, a real quarterback battle there. All right. Speaking of Josh Allen, mind you, as we continue around the NFL, Josh Allen was talking about Josh Allen, mind you, the MVP of the league last year. I should probably start there by putting some respect on his name. He was talking to SI.com, and he said, quote, "You know, it's such a great honor, and I do appreciate being honored for my work. But at the same time, I still didn't win a Super Bowl, didn't win a ring, and that is the only goal. It's the only focus that I've ever had going into the league." And this is like pretty boilerplate for guys of that status, when they know, especially quarterbacks, giving you the right answer. How much do you think that he believes that? Like, or how much do you think any of these MVPs believe it when they're like, yeah, the MVP, eh, that's fine. I'm more about this team success here.
I think he believes it 100% now. And the reason I say that is, when you come into the league, his ultimate goal coming into the league was not, most players, you know, the vast, vast majority of players, when you come into the league, your goal is, your number one goal, I should say, is not to win a Super Bowl. It's to make it in the league and get that second contract and have success. Once you get those contracts, once you get to that level, then it absolutely, I believe 100%. Right now, today, there's nothing he wants more than winning a title. He would trade the MVP trophy for a world championship, but he's already gotten his status. You know what I mean? It almost like it's like a moving target almost, in terms of what your number one priority is.
Yeah, I think I'm right there with you on that. So, but Josh Allen, to be fair, he also went further as to say the one positive about winning MVP means your team is in a good position.
Yeah.
You're making the playoffs. You're playing well. You're doing whatever you can to help your team to win football games. But at the end of the day, you got to make the playoffs, and you've got to win three or maybe four games. And that's what we need to do.
So. And especially him, because they've fallen so, they've gotten so close so many times.
Right. And I guess if you are inclined to do the like legacy conversation thing, like that is where for him, he is in that particular stance, right?
Yeah.
He's done the thing where, as you mentioned, he's bona fide as one of those type of guys. And then the next conversation then becomes, are you going to win games? Are you going to win Super Bowls? And so that is where he is in that trajectory. And so, yeah, that I found that to be an interesting thing when it came to offseason kind of talk generally. He's doing the thing, but he still has his eyes on the prize there. Some other things around the NFL. John Texter, who has an ownership stake with Crystal Palace, has agreed to sell that ownership stake to Woody Johnson, the owner of the New York Jets. Now he's selling a 43% stake in Crystal Palace, so he won't become the majority owner there, but at least, you know, he'll have a good amount of money tied in over there. And the reason why I bring this up,
by the way,
is
Crystal Palace Premier League soccer.
Yes, English Premier League soccer team. Yeah. Not the best, but not the worst. They've had a good run of things over the last few years. But the reason why I bring this up is I'm very interested in like these teams that have, or these ownership groups that have multiple interests, because I mean there's a lot of money that these owners have, but we often think about how much money do they have in relation to the team that they own. But their ownership group has to concern with themselves where that money is going in all these various different places. And I bring this up because the Boston Red Sox trading Rafael Devers, there was a secondary portion of this that I didn't talk about very much, but I saw some people discussing the idea that could this have been a money-saving situation, because on the English Premier League side, the Liverpool was owned by the same ownership group as the Boston Red Sox.
Yeah.
Had just signed a big-time player named Florian Wirtz up there for major, major money, historic signing. And was getting rid of Rafael Devers an opportunity to balance the books on a larger scale? Do you have any thoughts or any doubts that, or thoughts in the idea that owning that secondary team like Woody Johnson does will now with Crystal Palace changes it all, the dynamics and the workings and maybe the money that's available for the NFL team.
I was just fascinated by this because I don't think it makes any sense whatsoever that one ownership, that ownership in one league would, and maybe you're on the complete opposite side, but the way I look at it, ownership in one league is a completely different thing, a completely different pool of money, completely different investors from in another league. And the example you gave, obviously Red Sox and Liverpool and now Jets and Crystal Palace, those are, to me, I don't see how they could even allow for that to happen. Those are two different budgets, so to speak, and then one budget never impacts the other. Like Rafael Devers, as your example, that has nothing to do at all with the budget that's over here. They're not going to save money over here.
Well, the budget, not necessarily, but you got to sign the checks, right? All these checks are being, in theory, signed from the same place, which is that ownership group. And the comparison I will use, and this gets a little bit closer to home because I am a Manchester United fan. The Manchester United Football Club, again, another European soccer team, is owned by the Glazer family. Do you know what NFL team the Glazers own?
Yeah.
It's the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Mm-hmm. And a lot of Manchester United fans have felt that the Glazers have kind of situated the Manchester United situation to where they take money out of that organization and kind of line their pockets with that.
But has that been proved?
I mean, proved is to some degree, yes. Like, because they do, I mean, they do kind of take dividends out of the ownership group or what have you. Mm-hmm. And they are very clearly, I don't know that you necessarily say that they're putting it in with the Bucks, but you could tell that they have a different level of investment and involvement and care for the Bucks than they do over there. And I do wonder, like, does that at all give you pause at any times on whether an ownership group has their full commitment to what this particular team is doing at any given time?
Maybe I'm naive. It really hasn't. I look at them completely different. And I look at this particular one way different. I mean, Woody Johnson is obviously very, very wealthy man. He's 78 years old, and this is a 43% investment. This, to me, is an investment. You know, just legacy, money, et cetera. I don't see any way that now maybe your Man U thing is accurate, but I don't see it. No.
Yeah, and that's a fair thing from the 281. The Niners owners also have an ownership stake in Leeds United. Like, this happens a lot more frequently. Mm-hmm. These are things that I don't think that we, especially as Americans in our very American-focused way of looking at things, sometimes we don't see that. But I have noticed that happens at times. Not in all circumstances, because every owner is going to operate a little differently.
Yeah.
But I guess maybe this is a roundabout way to say, are the Jets ever going to be good? Like, is this going to hurt Aaron Glenn in his circumstances? Because Woody Johnson has already been a problematic owner to begin with, right? We make fun of him for having his children look at Madden ratings in order to determine how they do some of their things up there, right? And what then happens if, especially a new toy, a new boondoggle over there when it comes to buying it?
See, I think
that take some of his attention? And is that possibly a good thing if he has more of his attention over there and allows his football people to do football things with the Jets?
I think the reality is the perception is going to be that. The reality is not going to be that. I see him just throwing some money over there, getting the investment going. But anytime you can give Jets fans a reason to criticize you, they're going to jump on that reason, and this is a big one. Oh, he's owning Crystal Palace. He doesn't care about the Jets, et cetera, et cetera.
All right. Madden 26 ratings are out. We have ratings for Madden 26. All right. So first and foremost, we got to deal with the 99 Club.
Yeah.
Right? So there are, let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 99 Club rated players in Madden 26. Mm-hmm. Figgy, John, can you guess?
How many?
Let me get this again. 2, 4, 6, 7. 7 rated 99 overall players in Madden.
Myles Garrett.
Myles Garrett is correct.
Yeah.
You are 1 for 1.
Justin Jefferson.
That is correct. That is 2 of the 7 who are 99 rated.
Patrick Mahomes?
Patrick Mahomes is not 99 rated. He has a 95 overall rating. Okay. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah, that's probably fair.
Okay.
You know, based on what he did last year.
Is he the highest rated quarterback?
When it comes to quarterbacks, he is not the highest rated quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Burrow is the highest rated. Oh, actually, no, he is not the highest rated quarterback either.
Lamar.
Lamar Jackson is the highest rated quarterback. I gave away one of the answers. He is a 99.
He's a 99?
Well. Dang, I didn't think he was going to be a 90. I thought he was going to be probably 97, yeah. 98.
What do you think that says about the way that – I think Lamar Jackson, after winning the two MVPs, I think people, especially last year and the year prior, as a thrower of the football, I think there is no longer questions that can be had. Any of that he is a glorified running back, I think that is completely deaded. So I think once you get the passing and understand him as a deep – deep passer, and of course the clear running ability, it's really hard to not have him as a 99 overall. So you have Myles Garrett, Lamar Jackson, Justin Jefferson,
Saquon
Barkley is also one of the 99 overalls.
We're doing good.
Are three more.
I'm just guessing.
I will tell you, there is another quarterback that is a 99 overall.
That's Josh Allen.
Josh Allen. Yeah. And the last two.
We need two more, Figgy.
There's a wide receiver. And there is
Jamar Chase.
And the final one is a offensive lineman.
Oh. Who's the offensive lineman? Is it, what's his name?
It can't be Trent Williams.
It's not Trent Williams.
It's not Trent Williams.
Yeah. He plays in the NFC, though.
Mm-hmm.
He plays for the Super Bowl champions.
Oh, Lane Johnson.
Lane Johnson is the final 99 overall.
Damn, he had 99?
99 overall.
He's a legit 99.
All right, so outside of that, the Texans have four guys represented in the leaks that I've seen for Madden ratings.
Mm-hmm.
You have Nick Chubb, Danielle Hunter, Derek Stingley, and Joe Mixon. Who do you think is the highest rated of those four?
Derek Stingley.
Without question. He is a 93 overall.
Yeah.
Beyond that, Danielle Hunter and Joe Mixon both have 91 overall. Nick Chubb is 89 overall. Nico Collins did not show up. Will Anderson did not show up there.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you think is more disrespected of those two, Nico or Will Anderson, by not being rated
Nico,
at least 89?
Yeah, Nico for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it seemed like everybody else got him as a top five receiver or at least top 10.
Yeah.
It seemed like Madden don't.
So I've seen ratings up to like 88s overall. And of course, no Will Anderson Jr., no Nico Collins. Mm-hmm. But yeah, those are the Madden ratings that have come out, and those are your Texans and where they are on there. But yeah, shout out to Joe Mixon, Nick Chubb still being rated that high.
That's pretty high.
How about that?
Like, that's really high.
That is a bleep you to me in particular in the questions I have for Nick Chubb.
Reggie.
Yeah. If Nick Chubb produces as a 89 overall type player with Joe Mixon, you're set for fireworks, are you not?
You are set for fireworks. And and if he's just healthy, he's going to be that guy.
Yeah. So there you go. That's around the NFL here in the loop on Sports Radio 610. Appreciate you hanging out with us on this Tuesday. Coming up next, how should we measure C.J. Stroud's success this year beyond the obvious numbers? 713-572-4610 is the number to text. 713-572-4610.
Almost got caught.
Almost close. Boy. Is it Madden ratings that we judge in boxes? Let's do it. Next. All right, you're in the...
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Are you ready to dive into the stories, stats, and personalities that make baseball the greatest game in the world? Rob Bradford from the Baseballs and Boring podcast here, and we'll have you covered every day with podcasts that bring you closer to the action, from the bleachers to the clubhouse. Whether you're a diehard fan or just a casual observer, these conversations are aimed to educate, entertain, and most importantly, inform you. Follow the Baseballs and Boring podcast in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Loop right here on Sports Radio 610. Hope you're having a good Tuesday to this point. How should we measure CJ Stroud's success this year beyond obvious numbers? 713-572-4610. If you have some opinions on this. Yes, Isai, there was a trade in basketball that I'll talk about a little bit later. It doesn't directly relate to the Rockets, but it does in some ways when you look at, you know, who actually is best situated to try and stop the Thunder from breaking this streak of, you know, new winners every year. We'll talk about that at another time. But I do want to talk about CJ Stroud. There's been a lot of conversation up and down. We've done it too about, you know, was it a sophomore slump? No, it wasn't a sophomore slump. This was that. And then, you know, there's been back and forth. But I mean, without having to do too much more of that, let's look at what the season is going to go forward into. And we've talked about some of the things that give us hope for a better outcome offensively, right? A new offensive coordinator that seems very interested in the details and putting each of his players in an opportunity position to succeed. And an offensive coordinator who has given the reins entirely, or maybe at least largely, to the quarterback C.J. Stroud and the quarterback's coach Gerard Johnson to allow them to do the things that, you know, make winning plays on the field, a la Tom Brady in a situation that I imagine is somewhat similar when he was in the with the New England Patriots. But that's what we generally want to happen. Mm-hmm. How do we gauge if it's happening, if there's success? What are the metrics? What are the things that we look at to see if it's working?
Yeah, so I was thinking about this driving home from Aransas Pass yesterday. I was listening to, I'm sure you guys played a lot of it, the Fanatic stuff from C.J. Stroud.
We hadn't had an opportunity to get to it.
Well, but I was listening to it, and one answer that he gave struck me, you know, and brought up this question, because he was talking about, I guess she was asked, Kay Adams was asking about, you know, the good year and followed by the year that was, you know, widely criticized.
It might be cut 12 here. Figgy. Yeah, Figgy. I'm interested to see.
Because I was listening to it on the drive home because, you know, you're driving.
You weren't listening to us?
No, I wasn't. You know,
what's wrong with you,
man?
Because
the show wasn't as good. Anyway.
Wow. I'm texting Luke right now because that's a direct shot at Luke.
No, yeah, Luke, you don't be doing the show by yourself, buddy.
Luke, that's right. I'm going to need Luke. I love you, Luke. So this one in particular, Figgy, really stood out, and I'll explain why.
Last year was very, very, very helpful for me and my development. You know, I think every year, you know, you're playing against different defensive coordinators, different schemes, and they're studying your tape from the years prior on how to beat you and how to twist the pocket and how to roll coverage. And they're just doing things to throw you off. And the more you can focus on you by still, you know, making sure that you're taking care of the football and knowing what they're doing, I think that, I mean, honestly, you can do anything that you really want. I mean, really all of us, I mean, you know, Peyton, Eli, you've seen them be great for so many years. That's what they did year and year and year after. So I know us three, we're trying to do the same thing. So just learn from your mistakes and, you know, just really get better from those. And that's been my mindset.
So that got me thinking, how are you going to gauge whether he has success? I think this is a successful year. He mentioned Peyton and Eli, two vastly different quarterbacks in terms of numbers, right? Right?
Yeah.
And so, but both considered to be winners, you know, Super Bowl champions, and widely successful. So rather than go through all these things one by one and reacting, let me read all of these things to you and see if any of these jump out as to like, yes, C.J. Stroud had a great year in 2025. Is it going to be leadership on the field, the thing that he mentioned right there, mastering the line of scrimmage, knowing what defenses are throwing at them, et cetera? Is it going to be efficiency, which is maybe a little more Eli or certainly some other quarterbacks you can think of, over volume, like the gaudy numbers of his rookie year, the numbers that took a step back, but obviously with precarious circumstances surrounding him? Is it going to be playoff success? Forget the numbers. Win. Is it going to be wins, especially carrying this team to 11 or maybe even 12-plus wins for only the second time in their franchise's history? Is it going to be the Brady effect, the close game management, the come from behind management, and that, you know, that certain something that they tend to have? Or is it going to be metrics, you know, like the efficiency? Numbers might not be as good, but the metrics say he's having a great year. Or maybe just something as simple as third down efficiency, red zone efficiency. Like, how are you going to say that guy had a great year?
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Service is not available in all areas.
Are you ready to dive into the story, stats, and personalities that make baseball the greatest game in the world? Rob Bradford from the Baseballs and Boring podcast here, and we'll have you covered every day with podcasts that bring you closer to the action, from the bleachers to the clubhouse. Whether you're a diehard fan or just a casual observer, these conversations are aimed to educate, entertain, and most importantly, inform you. Follow the Baseballs and Boring podcast in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so this is actually very intriguing because I think that it's a lot of those. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's all of those, because the one I will tell you for sure is I don't think wins is going to be, mm-hmm. at least for me.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a weird thing to say. However, wins will not be it for me because, one, and I think it probably shouldn't be it or probably won't be it nationally unless there's a whole bunch of wins because, hey, look at the division that they're in. Mm-hmm. That's a patty cake. But then also you're playing some really tough teams.
Yeah.
In your division, you're playing the Ravens again. You're playing the Bills again, right? You're playing the Chiefs. Yes. You're starting off mm-hmm. early with the Rams. You're getting a Buccaneers team that is nothing to scoff at mm-hmm. if they continue their success. I don't know what the offense looks like without Liam Cohen coordinating it, but Baker Mayfield has been solid. So on and so forth. Yeah, you get the point, right? There's ups and downs of the actual schedule that I think will make it tough. But more importantly, you're changing a lot. The offense mm-hmm. in general is changing a lot. And there's a level of fluidity to the offense that makes it so that I'm not certain that it's going to be locked in week one. I'm not certain it's going to be locked in week three. Like, it might take mm-hmm. a few weeks for them to find what the offense truly is, the fullness of the identity of the offense.
Yeah.
And so if they lose a few games early, that makes it so that a season that probably should have been an 11-win season looks like a 10 or 9-win season.
Mm-hmm.
Does that change what's happening here? I don't know necessarily. So I don't know that I'd use wins as it, and on top of the idea that, a quarterback wins is not really a stat for me. But I think most of the other things that you're mentioning, I think, are hugely important for various reasons, right? Playoff success, we could start with, just because,
mm-hmm.
This is a team that has demonstrated themselves, even with an offense looking woeful, of winning a game in the playoffs. So if you were having an offense that, looked woeful and you had won a game in the playoffs, if you win a singular game in the playoffs, I don't know that we can attribute that to what's happening in the offense versus what the defense has been able to do and drag you to. Obviously, dependent on what it actually looks like. Leadership is going to be a huge one.
That's a big one for me. Yeah, what he's doing at the line of scrimmage. Not just leadership as in a leader. We've talked about that. Like, he's a leader by default. He's the quarterback. I'm talking about a leader, like, on the field.
Being able to run this offense. Yes. This offense that has a lot of nooks and crannies, has a lot of levers and buttons where, hey, man, you might have to, call some audibles on the field in order to get them into the right spaces for it. Having command, I think, is maybe the word of the offense, especially with the guys that he mentions there. That is the key thing I think of when I think mm-hmm. of Tom Brady, is the command of the offense.
And Peyton.
Hugely the thing that I think about with Peyton, that mm-hmm. he was his own coordinator.
Yeah.
They could have just taken that position off of the staff and mm-hmm. it would have run because he had that much of a command of what was happening. If C.J. Stroud demonstrates himself of having that level of command, maybe not even that level, that's probably unfair, mm-hmm. but having a significant amount of command of the offense, it does two things. One, it puts you in a significant place to demonstrate that he's well on his way to being that additional level of quarterback. But two, it serves as the biggest kind of demerit towards Bobby Slowick and the way that he went about orchestrating this offense mm-hmm. the last couple seasons.
The two that stand out to me, and you can weigh in, 713-572-4610. How are you going to measure success with C.J. Stroud? Because, clearly, and I don't mean to sound like a coach here, but the numbers are going to come if he does, certain things well. But the two that stand out to me is exactly what you said, mastering the line of scrimmage. That is a huge ask, especially when he's, on his second coordinator in 3 years and the first time that he has this thing that he asked for, and that's control. It's one of those things, Reggie, that I don't know if you can really put numbers on it, but you know it when you see it. You knew when Tom Brady was running, a particular – we didn't have to say Tom Brady and Peyton Manning because those are the two at the highest level. Drew Brees back in the day. Some of these quarterbacks, Patrick Mahomes right now knows, he improvises a lot, but he knows where to put the ball and how to run that offense with, with the leadership and the coaching that he has. So the mastering the offense, you'll know it when you see it. And then the second part is I do think close game management is going to be huge. Like, close game management is when that shows itself the most. Like, it's a close game, it's a playoff game, it's a big game, whatever. And he has to put them in the right play at the right time to win a game or to tie a game or whatever. Those two things to me are going to be it.
Yeah, you talk about clutch game, and I think that ties in with like efficiency over volume. If I mean, we were just talking about the Madden ratings having a lot of respect and love for what Nick Chubb is going to be in year two after the injury that he sustained with his knee. If you are doing that, if you have him in tow and you have Joe Mixon and you're running the football as it seems like you will, there's not going to be as much throwing of the football. Being efficient with the opportunities that you have will matter a significant amount. Plus, how much we're talking about this because of like the national narrative. You know what does great for a national narrative? Big time moments that end up showing up on SportsCenter, big time moments that you see on Red Zone. And it feels like in the right opportunities, those clutch moments, so to say, you know, CJ Stroud being in that space where he is, you know, making the perfect play in this circumstance is going to go a long way in showing the development and the acumen of CJ Stroud. So, yeah, I think that all of those will be a part of it in some way or another. And on top of that, like, hey, man, you said third down efficiency. Sure. First down efficiency will be a big one, especially to show the big change that happens, because that was a big issue for this offense, was not getting enough yards on first down, putting yourself behind the eight ball. So those little things like that will also go a long way.
Figgy, what would you say is going to be the biggest measure of success? Like, he had a successful year. And I will say this. I don't know if it'll matter if he throws for over 4,000 yards to me. There are a lot of great, great quarterbacks, including Patrick Mahomes, that threw for less than 4,000 yards. But what would you – like, okay, that's the point. That's how we know he's going to be successful.
Yeah, I think not taking as many sacks. I think staying upright, not throwing a lot of picks. I don't think he's not really a throw-a-lot-of-picks guy anyway, but I think if he could be more efficient, I think that's a good year. He don't have to throw for 4,000 yards or anything
He doesn't. I don't think he does.
Yeah, being meticulously efficient would be huge. But I want to leave this here because we're talking about us. CJ Stroud, what are your expectations for this 2025 season?
I can't say that like last year was a good or a bad year in my opinion. But internally, my expectations for this year are probably higher than a lot of people's outside expectations, just because, I mean, for me to be able to, you know, do some of the things that, you know, God has allowed me to do, and to be blessed enough to win Rookie of the Year and to be in the playoffs twice. I know the sky's the limit. Like, if you would have asked me 5 years ago, six, I would have like, man, you have.
I'll take that.
Yeah, like I have no shot to be who I am. I would have never thought. But it's nothing but like Eli said, in preparation and the hard work when nobody sees. So I think my year three expectations are, you know, whatever I really make them. So.
Yeah, I mean. I don't like some of the quarterbacks that threw for under 4,000 yards include Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes. They were pretty efficient. And considering the run game that you expect to have, it could be better.
I do love that he was like, I'm gonna make it evident. I got high expectations for myself. I'm not telling you exactly what they are.
They all do.
Not gonna tell you.
They all do.
832, you are right. CJ Stroud name dropping is elite. Peyton, Eli, Moses at one point, MLK. Yeah, why not? Look, if we're going to drop names, they might as well be the highest ones. Give all the biggest names that you can. All right. You're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Thanks for hanging out with us. Coming up next, let's get into what's popping, including the Astros starting a big six-game homestand. What do you expect from it? Plus, a little bit of news, agent news, as it relates to the Astros and why you might be losing another player in a few years. We'll talk about it next. All right, let's get into what's popping here in the loop on this Tuesday. June 24th in the great city of Houston. And we begin, honestly, I would begin where I was in the break. I'm going to be honest. Shout out to Isai on the YouTube page mentioning he's still nervous about Fred VanVleet. Not sure if the Rockets will pick up his team option. Obviously, they add Kevin Durant. He is the biggest number on your salary cap sheet for the upcoming season. Fred VanVleet would be the second at that $45 million thereabouts. That
I mean,
option.
You have to. Yeah, it's done.
Well, he's going to be back.
Yeah.
I think that they could easily pick up this option and be good under the second apron, which is really the big thing. You want to make sure you have a little bit of flexibility, even though you're in that space where you're paying the luxury tax or what have you. But the second apron becomes really prohibitive. And the Rockets don't have a pick as of right now. However, Danielle Lerner of Houston Chronicle did tweet or did report, rather. It'd be weird to just call it a tweet. Mm-hmm. But did report earlier that the Rockets, should the right player fall and should the cost not be too high, would be interested in trading back in to the NBA draft that's happening tomorrow to maybe select a player First and foremost, do you think how possible do you or how likely do you think it is that all those circumstances align for the Rockets and they go actually trade for a pick in this draft?
I mean, I wouldn't bet on it, but certainly, you know, it's probably on the table. I mean, because they do have to get. I mean, well, and we'll get into it at noon. We're going to dig in a little bit more on the Rockets, but there are certain things they need to get done, including, you know, how are you going to play Reed Sheppard now? I mean, you're going to play him more.
Yes, absolutely.
You're going to play him more.
100%.
But how is that going to play out?
I think that plays out with Reed Sheppard being your backup point guard. Yeah. But, yeah, we'll get there. I could easily still see them opting out of the contract and doing a deal that pushes him out multiple years.
Mm-hmm.
Would you rather have Fred VanVleet, now that we have this situated with Kevin Durant, would you rather have Fred VanVleet for just this year and then him a free agent next year, or would you rather have him here for the next 2-3 seasons at a more manageable, maybe like $30 million a year?
I think 1 year right now. With
not
Durant.
A huge Fred VanVleet fan.
No, I
okay.
am.
All right, see
I am, but you're talking about the second apron. What are the only, what you were telling me earlier, that's just $3
million? Yeah, just $3 million. Yeah. And, I mean, they still have a mid-level exception to utilize. Mm-hmm. I'm getting real into the salary cap weeds. So that $14 million that they would be able to use to maybe sign a player. I actually don't remember if that full MLE can be split and maybe used for a couple of players. I'll have to look into that. But they have a couple of means of adding, you know, players on the periphery, but that's going to be something to watch. June 29th is the date to remember, because I believe that is the date when they have to make the decision of whether or not to pick up that team option of Fred VanVleet's contract. All right, so there's that. I will come back to the thing that I really wanted to get to, which was the Houston Astros. They start a 6-game set tonight. Well, I guess a 6-game homestand, a couple of 3-game sets. First is against the Phillies. That'll take place. That'll start tonight with the Astros at Daikin Park, and then you get the set of three versus the Cubs, which with possible or not possible with some reunions. But before you start tonight with Ranger Suarez on the mound for the Phillies, and of course Framber Valdez, one of your aces, going for the Astros. Like, what are you looking forward to learning from this 6-game homestand that's coming from these two? Well, one of them is a really good team, at least in the Phillies, but the Cubs aren't anything to sneeze at either.
No, they're not. First of all, Ranger Suarez, worth the price of admission.
Oh.
Worth the price of admission.
Deals.
If you're thinking about getting to the ballpark tonight, because he and Framber, that's going to be another interesting one, you know, how they handle, you know, late inning situations. It's going to probably be a low-scoring, close game. What I'm looking for in the next 6 games, clearly, this is the best level up of competition that they've had in terms of a good stretch for a long time. How they hit? We've kind of gotten spoiled, you know, with some players, you know, like Isak and Cam Smith. They've been playing some pretty poor competition. It's a step up. You're facing one of the best pitchers in baseball today. Then you got Zach Wheeler. Then you've got is it Christopher Sanchez? Is the third pitcher for the Phillies? Like the Astros, keep in mind, you know, they've kind of feasted these last. I want to see them hit the ball against quality competition.
Yeah, that would be very nice to see. Like, that's very much something that you would like to get going. But yeah, that'll be a good test for this Astros team tonight. So that's something that's happening. A test for the Astros as an organization, and I do mean this almost as a litmus test for the Astros. Where are they with their big time players and what they do when those contracts are coming to bear? Now, this is a little dramatic because it's not that time yet, but it becomes the clock is ticking now that we know that Jeremy Peña, in the midst of what has been a breakout season for him, and that's kind of wild to say for a dude who was an ALCS and a World Series MVP. However, here we are. We found out yesterday he's got new representation, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, really?
And his representative?
Huh?
That dude.
Don't
in
say
baseball.
Scott Boras.
Scott Boras.
Oh, dang it!
I don't know if Jose Altuve got to him and was like, "Hey, dog, you playing well enough to come over to the big dogs? Come over to Death Row."
So he's the David Mulligetta baseball
bag man extraordinaire. Yeah. He pulls on that ski mask and he goes to work. Scott Boras does. I mean,
soon somebody signed with Boras, like, oh man,
what have they? If you were laying odds or percentages, what were the odds day before yesterday that he would remain an Astro when his contract comes up versus today?
Well, the tough part about it is you probably needed to do that extension prior anyways.
Mm-hmm.
But especially after a season like this today, I feel like you went from, ooh, that gets tough, to, ooh, it gets real tough. now he's already in arbitration. He's on an arbitration year this year, and he has two more arbitration years after that. which means that obviously you would still have control of him. It just depends on how much money you would spend.
Yeah.
And I don't know that the Astros would be in a place where they'd be spending a crazy amount of money. That's what the arbitration process, you find a number that you'd be comfortable with, hopefully, mm-hmm. and you get there. But once you get towards the end of those arbitration years, how confident are you that Jeremy Peña remains as an Astro, knowing that
Scott Boras,
I know. You're totally avoiding the question.
All right, I got you. His whole dynamic is, I'm trying to hit the open market. I'm trying to get maximum money.
Yeah.
And that does not feel like that is the MO of the Astros by any means. We know that they have like the 6 years or whatever. And especially then, if you're talking about 2 years from now, where are the Astros in contention?
Yes.
I think it's a question that's worth asking. Because you do have some young talent that looks like, hey, maybe you might be able to bridge this into that space. Mm-hmm. But Jeremy Peña is one of those guys. I feel pretty low on the dynamic. I'd probably put it, and this is just a random number here, for lack of a better term, 33%, right? We'll put it at a third chance that he stays. The question I have more so is not, will Jeremy Peña remain an Astro after those, two years after this one? It is, will the Astros do the thing that they did where they allow this to be a Carlos Correa, Alex Bregman?
No, Kyle Tucker.
Or will this be a Kyle Tucker?
Kyle Tucker. That's why I'm like, oh, great. I would have put it at like 75% chance that he'd remain an Astro. I'm with you. It's probably about a 33% chance now. Keep in mind, Kyle Tucker, legend, by the way, going to have his video tribute with Ryan Pressly on Friday. That's going to be kind of cool. Two dudes that definitely deserve the video tribute. And I actually have a confession that's related to that coming up in a little bit. But Kyle Tucker, for as big of a legend as he was here, as popular as he wasn't real happy. In fact, he was not happy, that they just kept, the arbitration kept happening. And I think it was a factor in him leaving. 100%.
I mean, yeah, that feels right. Yeah. I mean, and yeah, he in particular, it seems like his personality and the ways in which he felt like he wasn't respected, that made it so that he wasn't there. It's one of the things I love saying about sports and labor negotiation or what have you is money is a proxy for respect. It's not simply money.
Yeah.
Because, what are we talking about in, the difference between a million or a half million here or there at times? And, of course, for us, that sounds crazy. For the guys on the field and on the court, it's generational, and they've already, oftentimes, when we're doing some of the squabbling, they've already made a lot of it, not to, minimize what they're trying to accomplish to set themselves up for even further in their, generations or what have you. I'm very much pro-labor in that regard. Mm-hmm. However, what we're talking about is pretty minimal at times. And in those instances where it's minimal and you go, what's the difference? The difference is respect, right? And I think for Kyle Tucker, that's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting because I wouldn't have thought that for Jeremy Peña. However, Scott Boras, for him, it's always about that. And so I think you put yourself in this place where that's definitely going to be somewhere where the Astros and Peña and his representation are going to be at odds. I want to see if they've built a different MO for how they handle talent, talent leaving and not finding that agreeable number in order to continue to re-sign.
And, Altuve will be 36, 37. You alluded to it. You have some young players. You have some players that are going to be moving on. How are the Astros in terms of that long-term contract with someone like that, at that point in their existence?
Yeah. Some other things that are popping since we've just been basketballing it up, and we're in that time period where moves are being made. The Celtics are one of those teams that a lot of people are looking at, and I think some Rockets fans are even looking at because they're talking about that second apron. They're dealing with that heavy. There's a lot of money that's tied up. And now that Jason Tatum is going to be gone for a year, they want to find a way to make themselves a little bit, ease their salary cap.
Mm-hmm.
So there was conversations about the likes of Jrue Holiday, maybe Derek White, maybe Porzingis being traded in order to free up some space. Well, that's kind of already started. And
How about both?
I say kind of.
Yeah.
Because Jrue Holiday was traded, was this morning? Was this last night? Mm-hmm. I can't even remember exactly when it happened, but Jrue Holiday's been traded to the Portland Trailblazers. So that's another player that comes west.
Mm-hmm.
But Anfernee Simons goes the other way. A nice, young, talented player, shoots 38% from three, so he fits the Boston Celtics ethos, and he's an expiring contract, so it feels like, and he's played well enough where it feels like he's going to get paid decently. However, he's a nice, young, talented player.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if Portland maybe just didn't want to pay him, but I don't understand why they went and got Jrue Holiday.
I don't understand it either.
Multiple years. I think he has two more years and a player option on his contract, which I think he picks up. So you've traded a young, talented player with 1 year on his deal for an older player who is costing a lot of money with 3 years on his deal. Admittedly, Going to give you a good defense, but I don't know. He seems like he's waning a little bit in his career. Mm-hmm. I don't understand what Portland is doing. Do you like what they're doing here? Portland is a team that might find their way to being some level of good next year.
It looks to me like they just did the Celtics a favor. I mean, that's what it feels like. They just did him a solid. And by the way, the Celtics now, as of today, clearly in discussions with Porzingis as well.
Are they?
Reportedly.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's possibilities that more moves are made.
Yeah.
One of those names of guys, Derek White is the one that I think a lot of Rockets fans I've seen talk about. I guess we could talk about that more as we come up here. But are you interested at all in what Derek White could do for the Rockets?
Yes. I mean, just in general, but not necessarily like, oh my goodness, that would be a fantastic move or something like that.
Okay, fair enough. And we could talk about that more. Fair enough by Rocky on the YouTube page as well. Bryce Matthews, they said, will play shortstop when you let Pena go. I felt like he's going to be the second baseman.
Mm-hmm.
Probably, like, legitimately, the way that he's been playing, I'm looking for September. For Bryce Matthews.
Yeah, he might come up.
Highest prospect, most well-regarded prospect in the Astros system. Been swinging the bat well, which is the big thing for him. The defense is always going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't feel like you have anybody particularly blocking his way. Dubon has obviously been pretty damn good himself, having a little bit of a power surge over the last week or so. But, I mean, if it's time for Bryce Matthews to start getting a little bit of a taste of the majors, I think that I'm looking forward to. Of course, we're months out.
Yeah.
Bryce Matthews there. I don't know. But maybe you slide him over to shortstop, figure out something else second base-wise.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, you're on the clock when it comes from Pena now, it feels like. And, yes, I know you were having a wonderful day before I said that about Pena 504. But how about this? The Rockets have Kevin Durant, and when you look at odds makers, and they have the Rockets as the second highest odds of contending for the NBA championship. And with that being said, right, we've talked about the deal. We like what's happening. But what are the next steps? What still stands in the Rockets' way of getting to where you want to be? 713-572-4610. Let's have that discussion next.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Are you ready to dive into the stories, stats, and personalities that make baseball the greatest game in the world? Rob Bradford from the Baseballs and Boring podcast here, and we'll have you covered every day with podcasts that bring you closer to the action, from the bleachers to the clubhouse. Whether you're a diehard fan or just a casual observer, these conversations are aimed to educate, entertain, and most importantly, inform you. Follow the Baseballs and Boring podcast in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.